Powerful new technologies are increasing productivity, improving lives, and reshaping our world. But what will happen to our jobs? I speak with LinkedIn Asia Pacific Managing Director Olivier Legrand to talk about the changes happening in the labor market and how should organizations adapt. Hi, you're tuning in to Our One in Review with me, Cynthia Ng. Joining me on the show today is Olivier Legrand.
Yes.
He's the Managing Director of LinkedIn Asia Pacific. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Good morning, Cynthia.
Now, let's talk about jobs, right? That's what LinkedIn is about. One of the most pressing conversations, if I may say today, is around jobs of the future. Will I lose my job to a robot in the next 10 years? So I want to start with your observations on the broader trends, conversations that people are talking about the labor market in Asia Pacific.
Sure, thanks for asking the question. You know, the reason why we're able to answer that question is because we have a network on which professionals are going, 660 million professionals around the world, and they interact with companies, they interact with jobs, they interact with learning assets. So we're able to see people applying to jobs, companies posting jobs, people learning new skills. And so we're paying a lot of attention to a few trends in terms of the future of work. The first one is AI and automation and how it's going to impact the future of work. And basically what we're seeing is some job will be displaced, but what will happen for sure is a lot of our job will be probably 20 or 30% of our job will be taken over by bots. The most repetitive task, the lower value task will be taken over by AI and automation. And so we think it's both an opportunity and a challenge. The opportunity is that we'll be able to refocus on more productive things to do and so on. The second trend that we look at is the gig economy. We think that the rise of independent work is real, and that there are certain generations, particularly millennials, but also baby boomers, for whom it's going to be a really interesting way to get involved with the world of work in a way that maybe connects better with who they are and how they want to do it. And lastly, the thing we spend the most of time on is this notion of skills gap, which is this imbalance between the supply and demand of skills that there is. And in this area of skills gap, to answer your question, there are a few big trends. Like across Asia, we see a lot of demand for technical skills, ABC skills, like AI, big data, and cloud computing skills. I was looking at specifically to Malaysia, SMBs in Malaysia are looking at cloud computing, they're looking at user experience and design, and they're looking at data visualization. So you see a lot of hard skills, usually technical skills. And then the other piece that we see a lot of globally, but also in this part of the world, is that beyond the tech skills, there's a real gap and demand for soft skills. And so there, if you look at SMBs, for example, in this market, there's a lot around people with critical thinking, creativity, but also management skills, project management skills, and so on.
I'd like to get to your point on SMBs, small, medium companies, especially in Malaysia. This makes up about 90% of our economy. So for companies like that, I imagine resources would probably be the most challenging in terms of retraining, upskilling talent. So when you look at what they need and the skills and demand of talent, what other challenges do you think they would face at this point in time?
Yeah, what we see is that 76% in Malaysia of the people that join those small and medium businesses are millennials. So they hire a lot of youth, they hire a lot of young people. And so there, the challenge can be several fold. We know that millennials are very purpose focused, and so they're looking for companies that have the ability to articulate their mission and vision, what they stand for, what is their culture. And so we really encourage small and medium businesses in Malaysia and across the region to invest time into sharing this. You know, why are they doing what they're doing, how they're going to be doing it is really important. The other piece that we're seeing that is very present is this notion of really talent development. And this is a generation that wants to continue to evolve, that wants to continue to grow. And so they're also looking at companies that are going to invest into their development and that have learning and development assets available and platforms available. And that's another area where we work with a lot of them on. We have on our platform something called LinkedIn Learning. It's one of our businesses. We're very involved. We are a primary player in this learning and development world. And we're trying to help both the individual and the company to really get the right courses, do the right skills matching, and the right, you know, course matching for their employees.
So what are some of the, would you say, innovative approaches when it comes to talent development, when it comes to retaining talent?
Well, I mean, we talked about one right now. Learning and development is a core asset. I think it's also about, you know, attracting the right talent. And we talked about this notion of skills gap, you know, and the fact that sometimes the companies feel that they can't find the people they want to find, and people feel they can't find the jobs they want to find. And so for this region particularly, there's a few things that are at play, in my opinion. One is, just like anywhere else, there's a shortage of technical talent, but it's a pretty much a global thing. The difference, though, is that Asia-Pacific and Southeast Asia is an exporter of this talent. Whenever we
have people... So we're losing talents that we need here.
Exactly. So when we have those people and when we train those people, they get very quickly opportunities to go to work to Singapore right next door, or to go to the UK, or to go to the US. Mm-hmm. And so we need to find solutions for companies in Malaysia and across the region to retain those talents and to give them opportunity. And some local startups are doing this really well, you know, Grab here, Gojek in Indonesia. We need to continue to provide the opportunity for these people to grow successfully in market.
And what are the factors that would entice talent to stay in?
Opportunity. And, you know, LinkedIn is all about that. We are about creating opportunity. We're about connecting people to opportunity. Whether this opportunity is a job, whether this opportunity is to create your company, whether this opportunity is to be able to find distribution for your business, find customers on the platform, find the opportunity to market to the audiences. Mm-hmm. So we're very focused on this notion of opportunity. And we believe that what gets people to stay is when they feel that the opportunity is there and is available to them.
I want to get your thoughts on the gig economy you mentioned earlier. What would you say would be the future of how work would look like? Is the 40-hour work week would be something of the past? And I think more importantly, I would like to ask is that are organizations responding to these changes and when it comes to what people want, what young talent want at work?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, we believe that independent work, especially in the context of skills gap, where some people have skills that are really in high demand, put these individuals in a position of choice. So if you are a data scientist today and you're based in KL or somewhere in the region, the opportunities for work for you are going to be massive. And you're going to have the choice to say, I'm going to choose an organization and join that organization. Or potentially you're going to say, well, I'm not going to join any organization, but I'm going to work for multiple organizations on a mission base. I'm going to work on super interesting projects that are going to be valuable to me. And I think both will cohabitate. They will live together. But we think that companies will have to use that lever, use that opportunity to not just bring always talent in-house at 100%, but sometime to bring people in that will be able to drive value for the company in the context of a specific project. Now, it means a lot in terms of the culture of your company. How do you bring these people in? How do you make sure that they feel at home? Mm-hmm. How do you make sure that other employees welcome them in the right way? So I think there's a lot of, you know, thoughtful ways of thinking about onboarding those individuals and creating an environment where both permanent people and people that come for gigs will be successful.
When you work a lot with companies, big and small, and understand their needs, so when you speak to them, what are some of the challenges that leaders face when it comes to getting the right talent? And more specifically, is that changing policies, like HR policies and the company culture, what would you say are some of the biggest challenge for them?
So the biggest challenge is the skills gap. When you talk to CEOs around the region and you ask them what keeps them at night, if anything, it's usually, am I going to be able to find the talent that is required for me to get my business forward and get my strategy forward? And I think there are a few things that we work with those companies on. You know, on one hand, there is a shortage of certain skills, but we also think that part of this issue can be self-inflicted sometimes because companies have a very linear way of thinking about hiring. They're looking at people that have X amount of years of experience in that particular industry doing exactly this job. They're basically hiring on job titles and on experience. We're trying to help companies to hire on skills, Because we believe that skills is a much broader way to think about it. You can find the skills you want in different industries. You can find the skills you want maybe in manufacturing. And if you are only, you know, hiring people that have experience in financial services because your company is in there, you're limiting your talent pool naturally. That's one element where we're trying to really try to help companies thinking about it in terms of skill. The other piece is you can choose to hire people that are perfect, that have 100% of the skills you need in exactly the right industry. But again, by doing this, you're shrinking the pool of opportunity. And so we believe a lot, back to learning and development, that there is an opportunity to hire people that have 60, 70, 80% of the skills that you need, okay, and to demonstrate to them that you're an organization that's gonna help them acquire the 20% missing. And I think by doing this, you make yourself very attractive because you demonstrate that you're a company that's gonna be investing in those individuals, and you basically upskill them, and it's a journey that you take with them. And so you bring people in and you upskill them. It's a very good value proposition for companies. Churn is expensive. Having to renew your team very regularly is expensive. And the need for upskilling, is there any way? Because technology moves really fast. And I think that's one of the big changes between today and yesterday and tomorrow and today, is at which pace skills deprecate and at which pace you need to learn new skills to stay relevant to the role.
Do you think that Malaysian companies are investing enough in upskilling, reskilling?
I think Malaysian companies all over the world are thinking a lot about, you know, learning and development, and we work with a number of companies in this market. I think all companies in general have incentive to spend more time on this and to think more about it, and opportunities to do that. The other area that I think is really interesting at the moment in terms of modern HR practice is the area of employee engagement. Mm-hmm. And really running surveys to understand how people in your company feel, you know, if they feel they are clear on the mission and vision of the company, if they feel they're clear about the top priorities of the company, if they trust the management of the company, if they feel they have the means to be successful in the role they're in. And we run those surveys at LinkedIn every 3 months with our employees as our own practice. And a year ago, we acquired a company called Glint that does this really, really well. They have, from our perspective, an unbelievable technology, an incredible technology, and they also have a very deep knowledge and consultative support. And for me, there's a real deep connection between, you know, hearing the feedback from your employees on how they feel and being able to invest in them and connect them directly to learning assets as well. So this notion of like listening to your employees and responding to their need through learning and development is a very powerful combination. So there's a lot of things that companies can do, and it's essentially things that we are advising them on. Looking at the data, understanding the skills gap within the company, and how to fill up those skills gaps from a learning and development perspective, but also create the link with their employees so that the leadership of the company has a real understanding of what's going on internally and what are the gaps that they can be helping with.
I'd like to get your thoughts on the notion of work-life balance, because I saw a study by LinkedIn, I think it was last year, it's shown that nearly half of people in Asia Pacific will regard work-life balance as the ultimate job aspiration. So would you, what are your thoughts about that? Because, you know, with technology making their ways into our mobile phones or pockets, and it's really blurring the line between work and home. So
what's interesting is we see the numbers that you're seeing in terms of like 50% of people thinking of work-life balance being really important to them. But those same people are talking about the value of hard work at the same time. And so we're not looking at people that necessarily looking at working less. I think they're looking at ways to work better. And so this is where, you know, work from home policy and establishing the right technology so that people can find the balance in their life of working when they can and where they can, and also being present with their family and being able to carve out time for things that matter to them is really important. So, you know, as an organization, we think a lot about this. We think a lot about creating work environment that are very stimulating for our people so that they want to be in the office, want to be with their colleagues, but at the same time providing them with the technology that's going to allow them to do some of the work from home when they have to, or do it on the road when they have to, which I think is contributing to bringing together this notion of work-life balance and this value that they give to hard work. They want to work hard, they want to be successful, but they want to be able to do it sometime in their own terms. And I think both the gig economy and flexibility and technology at work can help with that.
Well, that's from the employee's perspective. But from the employer's perspective, productivity and also trust, of course, are key concerns when it comes to implementing things like flexible working hours.
Yes. Right?
Do you see a lot of resistance from employers?
From employers?
Yeah.
It varies so much from one company to another. It's really a function of culture. I think you're absolutely right to point at trust. But I think, building trust with your employees and trusting your employers is the beginning of the relationship that need to exist. And if you think about most of our employees being millennials already and in the future being, Gen Y or Gen Z, when you know the importance of trust, when you know the importance of purpose, I think you need to build that foundation of trust with them right from the get-go if you want to keep them as talent. So it's not just, provide them with work-life balance, but just attract them into your organization and keep them as talent internally. So it's, it's a work in progress, I think, for all organizations, but I think it's something that's now very well understood by a number of industries and a number of
large. So how do you guys do it at LinkedIn then? How do you do it?
We're very focused on culture, and so we spend a very meaningful amount of time both explaining the mission and vision of the company. What's our purpose? Why are we doing what we're doing? So, for example, our mission is to connect the world's professional to make them more productive and successful. Our vision is to create economic opportunity for every member of the global workforce. So that kind of sets the scene, like every product we build, every product we sell is aligned to this mission statement. And even further away, we start to operationalize toward that vision statement that I just mentioned. And that creates sort of a true north for our employees. And then we spend a lot of time walking the team through our culture and values. Because, if the mission and vision is the what, the culture and value is the how. Mm-hmm. How are we going to work with our customers? How we want to treat our customers beautifully? How we want to work with one another? What's really important to us in terms of core principle, integrity, of course, but also things like being open, honest, and constructive, acting like an owner, if you think about trust and independence. Members first, we are a consumer web platform that is providing services, mm-hmm. and our member is the most important constituent at LinkedIn. Things like that are really helping our people understand the what and the how. And then I think there's core principles around transparency. We try to be very, very transparent with our employees in terms of understanding why we're doing what we're doing. Why are we taking the decision that we are taking? So that they can feel a part of that decision and so that they can also connect it with themselves and say, do I feel aligned with this decision now that I understand the why? And if I do, I can continue to collaborate and to be effective within the company. So we spend a lot of time on all those different pillars of like transparency, culture and values, mission and vision.
What would you say is the growth strategy for LinkedIn in Asia-Pacific? You've been managing director for almost 3 years, correct me if I'm wrong.
Almost 4 years.
Almost 4 years. So what are the opportunities do you see? Because I understand that LinkedIn is it starts as a freemium model and then you work your way up with different services that you provide to businesses, to SMEs and things like that.
Yeah, so we are... I mean, the free LinkedIn is a big part of our offering, and it's really the website that 660 million people are using across the world. Our focus is on opportunity creation and creating all forms of opportunities for our members. So when we look at this part of the world, there is we've done a really good job at connecting both mid-career professional, really senior people. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a really large influx of youth. New graduates, career starters, and they're really, really important. And so, how can we help those new graduates? How can we help those career starters finding their dream job is a big part of our strategy and of our growth in Asia Pacific. And then there's how we help companies, in terms of implementing modern HR strategy. How can they use our data to really, plan, hire, and develop their people? How can we use brands, get access to the B2B audience or the mm-hmm. B2C high consideration, I would say, audiences that they need to position their brand, to position their product and services. We help sales teams with a product called Sales Navigator just be better salespeople and be more thoughtful about the way they're approaching. And of course, the learning and development side, where we're very involved, which is a very deep companion to the talent acquisition, as I mentioned at the beginning. We help you attract the best talent, and we help you retain the best talent through.
What can one do to stand out on the network?
It's a mix of, first of all, creating your profile and painting an accurate picture of where you are in your career, who you are, what you've done. And sometimes going beyond, you know, the job title, like describing, you know, being a marketing manager in a healthcare company can mean different things to different people. And so going a little deeper in terms of explaining your achievement, what you've done, and how you've created value for the organization that you work for. So this notion of, like, you know, creating your professional online identity online to be searchable, visible. The second piece is around building a relevant network. Mm-hmm. You know, we believe that relationship matters, and they do in business across the world. I think they particularly do in Asia. And so for people to use a platform like LinkedIn to build the right networks, you know, whether it's your customers, your mentors, your sponsors, your investors, if you're an entrepreneur, how do you make sure that you are definite and organized and structured in the way you build that network? And then it's how do you share value back to this network, which is usually in the form of content. And so we encourage people to, you know, share articles that they think are relevant to their community, write articles sometimes that are going to be relevant to their communities, engage with stories that they think are in line with what they're trying to achieve or what their organization are trying to achieve. So it's, you know, really being smart about portraying your presence, building the right network, and then leveraging those relationships. And one of the things that we're very passionate about is helping closing this notion of network gaps. You know, I was yesterday at a magic event here speaking, and we talked a lot about young entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And if you look at young entrepreneurs and you ask them, you know, what's preventing them from launching their business, it's a mix of financial security and access to network and access to support, and the support being probably mentors and so on. And so we think that LinkedIn can be a place where people can do that, and we're very focused and trying to see how we can help people that aren't necessarily born with network actually build networks on the platform.
And how do you ensure integrity and trust towards the platform? It is a social network platform at the end of it, right? And if you look at other big ones, you have instances, cases like spamming and people sharing things which are, it's not what you want in your inbox, but this also do tend to happen on the LinkedIn platform. How are you guys managing that?
Yeah, we're very focused on, you know, the trust and safety of our members on the platform. And we do this through different ways. The first is we're trying to be very clear around a principle that we call, you know, clarity, consistency, and control. So we want to be very clear on, you know, what are the terms of use of LinkedIn. So we share that very, very carefully, and we tell our members, this is the behaviors and how you should be managing your presence on the platform. We're very consistent in the way we react to people that are going against those principles. So we have a trust and safety teams that is, you know, closing fake profiles and, you know, identifying people that have the wrong behaviors on the platform and shutting them down, and it happens every now and then. And then control, we want people to be in control of their data. It's important that they decide to share and what they share. And so giving this element of control. The second piece is we build a platform that is really focused on professionals. And that professional context on the platform is extremely important and is creating, you know, a bit of self-policing on the platform. The reality is it's a real name network where you go and you engage with your colleagues, you engage with current employers, future employers, you engage with customers. And so that creates a really unique context where people are very thoughtful about what they share on LinkedIn. And they realize that, you know, representing themselves in an inappropriate way is going to be at their disservice as opposed to anything.
All right. Just one final question. I'd like to bring this back to the Malaysian context. If you can share with me, like, three things that you observe in Malaysia when it comes to jobs and hiring and talent mismatch?
So I think there is an element of, you know, being very clear for Malaysian SMBs, for example, when you post a job on LinkedIn, being very clear on and thoughtful about the skills that you want to attract and being very specific about what are those skills, thinking about how you're going to be evaluating those skills as part of your interview process. is going to be really important. The other piece is what I was mentioning about is try to open up the aperture of the people you want to bring into your organization. Thinking, you know, beyond the industry, beyond the job title, and accepting that bringing unconventional talent into your organization is actually an opportunity. And so this, you know, let's grow the pool. Let's grow the pool of people that you're going to be able to bring inside the organization. And of course, in order to be able to do that, the third thing is invest in learning and development. Show these people that you're going to be investing in them because it's good for them and it's good for the organization. At LinkedIn, we try to work on all three dimensions. We work with individuals where we're trying to empower them for their own lifelong learning journey. We work with organization where we are providing them with both the tool to hire great people on skills, not necessarily on the more traditional way of doing this, as well as investing in their learning and development, investing in the feedback that they can give to the organization, as I mentioned earlier. So this is really important. And we also work with government. And so we have our public policy team has an incredible asset that we call the economic graph, the LinkedIn economic graph, which is basically all the interactions that are happening on the platform, as I mentioned at the beginning, between, you know, companies, you know, potential members and potential employees, companies posting jobs, people applying to jobs, schools, you know, investing on the platform and sharing, you know,
so you have the data.
Opportunities. So we have the data, and we're trying to make this data available to policymakers to help them understand what are the skills of the future and what are the curriculum of the futures that could be built on the back of that data set.
All right. Thank you so much, Olivier, for your time, and thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.